Blog Talk Radio.
Getting It Right with Dr. Bowles. Well, hello, my radio listeners. It has been 2 weeks since last I spoke to you, and I am so excited to be speaking to you this afternoon. I am in central Louisiana, and we are having a change in weather every hour. This morning, we had the icy, sleet fall as predicted, but right now the sunshine is blinding. It is still very cold, obviously above freezing because our roads are wet and not icy, but I'm having a wonderful day. I have been out earlier today, and it was chilly. The wind is extremely cold, and for those who are particularly fond of southeast United States will find it excruciatingly cold. But having lived in other places, it is cold, but not that bad. I can handle it. Today, I want to talk to you about microaggression. Now, that was a new term to me. I don't know how many of you have heard it before. I look for words. I'm a little bit of a word nerd. I do like language. And I found this term to be one of those trying to water down hurtful, mean-spirited things. I understand the term came out of some paper written by a professor out of Harvard, and it has been picked up like wildfire, like this is already accepted and everybody believes it and it is true. Well, I'm not among that group. The term microaggression, as defined, as I read the document, there are little insults or maybe insensitive comments that show a person's biases, in my opinion, against a marginalized group. Now, everywhere in the United States, if you use the word bully, you'll get a reaction, oh, don't bully. And we have had all kind of campaign. We've had federal funds. We've had resource officers in high schools paid money to try and decrease bullying, to show that bullying is not okay, that any time you pick on a marginalized group, and what do I mean? Okay, let's say a child is fat, and you call him the fat kid, and then he becomes the end of all jokes. A child that has androgynous behavior. It looks like a boy, but acts like a girl. Looks like a girl, but acts like a boy. Sometime in middle school or high school, and even in business life, there's a tendency to go after what is different or unusual. And a very big target, of course, in this United States is the color of your skin. I did some research, and I'm working with a very scholarly person who is looking at what is America and why is race just staying in the forefront. And it appears that from all things we can find, the United States was created for the white European and the Nordic descent. And on that premise, the resistance to diversify, the word keeps being thrown out, or allow the blending, as they say, or what was the term, melting pot. The United States was created for a specific group, and the laws, the Constitution, were all stylized to support that group. And there is a difficulty in trying to stretch what was written by, as they call, the forefathers to include those that the forefathers never intended to include. And that's another radio discussion, but I invite anyone listening to please chime in. Let me hear from you because I'm expressing my opinion and perhaps the opinion of those I've talked to about this before. Getting back on point, microaggression, however, is a new term, in my opinion, to be to take your attention off of things. If we keep saying racial prejudice or we keep saying straight-up racism, it's now old passé. It's like changing your wardrobe for the spring. And this new term, microaggression, goes through and describes insults or insensitivities toward marginalized people, and the speaker did not intend to do this. Well, I don't buy it. As I put on my blog sheet for this particular show, I stated microaggressions are more than just insults and insensitive comments that show people's biases against marginalized people, leaving their victims feeling uncomfortable or insulted. Their remarks, questions, and actions are painful because they have to do with a person's membership in a group that's discriminated against. They happen casually and often with any harm intended. Now, that's the phrasing of my friend who originated this word, without any harm intended, and that's where I stand to argue. These racial assaults to black dignity are incessant and cumulative. The major vehicle for racism in this country is offenses done to blacks by whites in this sort of gratuitous, never-ending way. And these offenses are microaggressions. Almost all black-white racial interactions are characterized by white put-downs done in an automatic fashion. These many disasters accumulate. Statements appear to be a compliment or a joke, but can contain a hidden insult about a group of people. Now, there are things on TV, and I've watched some black comedians who present these micro insults, and it is meant for two things. One, it's poking fun at white America to think we don't know what they're doing. And secondarily, it gives a chance for black America to be open about it and talk about it. Dave Chappelle does an outstanding job, in my opinion, in both his stand-up and his characters in presenting subtle but still insidious assumptions and put-upons. And you would say, well, wait a minute, I'm not following. What exactly are you talking about? Well, the person who wrote the original paper talked about a good example, I guess, would be somewhat innocuous, but still can be hurtful to the group you directed. In a California university setting, a professor says to a Chinese American, "Your English is so good. You speak English very well." And the bottom line is, the man was born in Sacramento, California. So why shouldn't his English be very good? The assumption on the part of the speaker is that he looks very Asian. Asians have a characteristic RL mispronunciation. So rather than seeing this person as part of America, why? Because Americans are white and European and Nordic descent. This very Asian-looking man must have been born to China, and gee, his English sounds so good, I'm going to compliment him. So this would have been considered a microaggressive remark. The speaker has just assumed so thoroughly the origin of the person to whom they're speaking that they are complimenting the English when, in fact, the person speaking had as much right to speak and sound Californian and have American English as the one doing the complimenting. Another example is having a fixed concept of level of achievement. I have personally have had white American females come to me when I'm in a setting and begin asking me questions as if I work in a certain environment. The presumption being that a black person would be a cook in a restaurant, or a black person would be a cleaning person in an office setting. And these seemingly harmless, no malintent, is really very harmful, and it speaks very strongly to just how the stereotypes are well founded into the very core of people, that if you look at someone and then decide what their level of achievement or their ability of performance, that's a caste system. I remember many years ago when I was taking philosophy courses, and I was in a much more academic environment. I think I was in student union on a college campus somewhere in the Middle West, and a lot of scholarly people just assembled to have coffee, and the conversation came upon, is there a caste system in the United States? And there was a strong argument, caste being C-A-S-T-E. Generally, when I refer to caste, I envision the hierarchy that is in India. You can be of different castes. And I don't know the Indian culture so well, but what I understand is certain castes came out of jobs, that if you were a butcher, you were in this caste. If you handled the dead or a funeral home, you were in a certain caste, and so forth. And they mark themselves not only with the knowledge of what your family does, but with the small dot. I'm sure if you've been around the Indian National, you'll see the red dot on the forehead. It's either red or black. I haven't seen other colors, but I do know that I have seen the Indian women who dress in their traditional saris who also wear the dot on the forehead. I'm not sure if men do as well. Often the men will have their head wrapped if they're of certain caste and so forth. But my point being, there are nations that fully accept the concept of caste. In England, if you are a fan of that show, Downton Abbey, I think it is, Downton Abbey, and you see how separated the upstairs people are from the downstairs people. Well, that's aristocratic setup, and the Queen of England is certainly at the top of the aristocratic structure, where it is expected that she would have all these amenities and servants and special castle and horses and so forth, because they see that as her position. Well, when they claim there is no caste or any aristocratic structures in the United States, that's false. We deny it, but we practice it. And what is inherent to me in the microaggressive montage is that there are those who have placed themselves in hierarchy and look about and see others as diminutive or less than themselves. And those who are placed on a hierarchy have some authority to comment on the marginalized persons, if you like. And their comments are never ill intent, because they're incapable of ill intent. They are of the higher group. And I always smile when I think about that. I was watching a documentary where they were looking at sensitivities of young people. The question was, does racial bias or prejudice, is it learned or is it inherent? And so they had gotten a group of progressive young people. They weren't in any specific socioeconomic level, meaning they weren't living in a double-wide trailer in some remote part of the Southeast, nor were they in some deprived multi-housing in the urban area. These were purportedly balanced, nurtured American youth from the age of 18 to 25. Questions were asked, what does race mean to you? And I was struck very much by an attractive young brunette white female who stated race meant nothing to her because she was white. And you have to pause, because too often that's the thinking. I'm not of that group. When race is applied, it is sometimes extrapolated to mean that you're not white, because white is not a race. White is the paradigm. It is the beginning. It is the end. If you're not white, then you belong in a race. And often when I'm looking at federal grant applications and other paperwork, the United States questioning will say things as ethnic groups, without regard to ethnicity, without regard to race, ethnicity, but it has the, or you're able to infer, I won't say they meant to imply, but you, those of us looking at that infer that you're not white. That's what they're really saying. If you're not white, check one of these blocks. And most recently, and I have to say that I was just offended to the highest degree, not because they were attacking Black American, the ethnicity to which I belong, but there was a Department of Justice Office on Violence Against Women document, which I recently was working on a grant with a nonprofit group. This is an RFP, a request for proposal. And in their attempt to be inclusive, they have a statement that shocked me and rocked me. And I said, I don't know who prepared this proposal, but when it comes to sensitivities, they got an absolute zero. And you would say, well, why would you say that? In their talking about the groups not to be excluded, they list it, and I'm looking to read it because I don't want to get it wrong. It just shook me to my core. It says that it must also include gays, lesbians, transvestites, queers, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, two-spirited, don't have a clue what two-spirited means, queer, and questioning youth. I said, I don't know who wrote that. If they were trying to say be all inclusive for people with various sexual proclivities, I have never heard any of the homosexual proclivity group identify themselves affectionately as queer. Queer to me is just as offensive in hearing as any other name calling. And for a federal official, a writer of an RFP, to literally use the vernacular, which I think is offensive. I mean, I'm not of that group. I had already seen it written as LGBT, lesbian, gay, transsexual, bisexual. And that's how I'd seen it, just capital letters, so you knew the acronym. You were saying those who were outside of the heterosexual group is how I took it, didn't try to break it down into anything more. But to see a federal agency literally put into writing that these are your inclusion groups, and among them they say queer, I would question what sensitivities did that writer have and how genuine would such an organization be. Now, keep in mind, this is our Department of Justice that's using inflammatory language in identifying the groups not to be left out. So I couldn't help but see that tongue-in-cheek that someone slipped and let their true feelings come through, or they were so inculcated with their own corruption that they couldn't see offense. And this comes back to the term microaggression, that if they're so comfortable referring to the LGBT group as queers, that when they were writing or editing, I'm sure this document got edited, there was no editor who saw that as an offense or something not to be sent out, requesting proposals to include those groups. So why am I talking about microaggression? Well, I think that if we allow that the ugly things to be beautified or perfumed, it makes me think of the biblical references of whitewashed sepulchres. And when I first had read that and heard others speak of it, I didn't quite get it. A sepulcher, for those who don't know, is where you put a body. And it has a heavy wall and a heavy lid. And as that body decays, if no one is aware of it, the putrefaction smell is not a wonderful smell, at least not to most of us. So if you have something rotting inside and yet you want it to look beautiful, you would whitewash it. You'd clean it up and make it really pretty, when if you were to look inside, it is putrefying. And this is what this feels like to me, that there is a new term on the board, microaggression. It sounds a lot less aggressive, a lot less harmful than bullying, than racial prejudice, or any other of the terms that really identify what's going on. If you strike me and I bleed, it doesn't matter what you call it. You can say you tapped me, you touched me harshly, you inadvertently removed tissue from me. The bottom line is the victim, the person receiving the injury, is injured nonetheless. So all this effort, energy put into definitions and softening, I always thought when you heard someone say misappropriation of funds, you try to sit there and scratch your head. What it means is someone stole some money. Why misappropriation of funds became the jargon or the parlance that you hear news reporters say, they don't use it until you're talking about some rich person or some powerful person. Only people on Wall Street can misappropriate funds, or a CEO or some business person. Anyone who walks in a bank, they steal, they rob. If you are doing some kind of fraud and you're cooking your books, you're stealing. But if you're in a high enough class or caste here in America, it is a misappropriation of funds. The other term that always got me was displacement of people, that after Hurricane Katrina, if they didn't call the people, citizens of the United States living in New Orleans, refugees, and I just fell over, that was repeated, refugees from New Orleans. You can't be a refugee when you are a citizen of that country, but somehow mass media did not capture the meaning or the difference. You can say evacuees, you're evacuating someone, but refugee was used widely. It's the same kind of misinformation. Misinformation is a lie. if I told you information that's not true, I lied. So we have to be careful that we're not whitewashing sepulchres, that we're not trying to beautify what is ugly. Bullying is bullying, and racial bias is racial biases, and being a racist is being a racist. That if you think it's okay to say something derogatory to me because I'm a black female, then you are wrong. And that we make the word soften, it seems you'll get less consequence, because, gee whiz, why should I be upset? You just had some microaggression. Well, I'm going to tell you, if no one else gets a chance, if you think that you can gently give me an insult or you can create a problem for me for whatever reason and think, well, gee, that was just microaggression, it isn't. Call it what it is. What was the statement? Call a spade a spade. There is no way to be to have a joke at someone else's expense. If the person listening or at the butt of what you're saying is not laughing when you're saying it, it's not a joke to them. Doesn't matter whether it should be in your opinion or they should be less sensitive in your opinion. Doesn't matter. If you're living in a society and you're working within a civilized culture, you are sensitive to your actions. And if your action is causing harm, you are wrong, period. Doesn't matter if your intent wasn't harmful. If the final analysis says you came, you created harm, then you are the villain. You are the bad guy. It's nothing funny when you see it a certain way. There was a comment made on television. I think it was I'm bad with names, but the character on television helps you get your clothes right and dress right. And she made a very derogative comment about a young lady who was wearing the reggae hairstyle, which is just twisting the hair. And if the hair has enough kink to it, it will hold itself together. And if you let it grow, it will grow in long locks. And there was a comment made that it looked so ragged and dirty. And then she said, well, I didn't mean anything about it. I was simply saying it's not a polished look. But by whose standard? By whose culture? If what you call beautiful is bone straight and stringy, I may see that as very unattractive. What you call beautiful is bleak yellow and almost white. I may find that very unattractive. But to attack an appearance because it doesn't sit well with you, maybe you like red, I like yellow. And her words exposed her strong feelings. I could hear her say, for the office here in the United States or an American office or in a conventional marketing job where you're going to be meeting the powerful Americans who usually mean white American male, this may not be very attractive to that group. But to tell someone that it is ragged and dirty, then don't travel to Jamaica or Haiti or Africa or countries and nations where the majority of the people would wear their hair in that fashion. The comment was extremely insensitive. It certainly revealed the narrowness of the speaker's background, that beauty is only white and straight or organized curls. And to attack someone's appearance based on that, to me, is very racist. And however you want to say, I learned my lesson and I didn't mean anything by it. All of that is parlance to say, I want not to be judged harshly because I said what someone else didn't like. Well, that's bullying. If I have someone who would shove a child against the wall and say, give me your money for lunch, or I will hit you, or I will spit on your sister, or I will whatever, we would be outraged because that's not acceptable behavior. Well, I put it out there that also saying what they would say, I didn't mean any harm, it's not acceptable simply because you meant no harm. If you cannot contain your extreme negative feelings when speaking to the very group that you feel negative towards, just be quiet. Say nothing. Move back. If you don't know how to interact, don't. I think about when I was in college, I went to undergraduate North Carolina State University, Raleigh, North Carolina, and it was in the 70s. And a lot of North Carolinians were not ready to have Black Americans enter into a lot of their sanctums, which include their college dorm rooms and restaurants and whatever. Civil rights had already come and gone, but the minds of the people were still set in their own ways. And I remember working in a lab, and one of the graduate students came to me, and I had cut my hair extremely short because I had no way to groom my hair in that setting. And she would walk up to me in the morning and literally take her hand as if she were petting a dog or roughing the head of a dog. She'd rub her hand in my hair, and I'd tilt my head. It didn't matter. She'd continue as if she had great authority over me. Was an adult. She was an adult. This is not a child-adult situation. Then after she would rub her hand in my hair, she'd start to rub her fingers on her elbows as if what she was doing was getting some kind of expressed oil or lotion from my head, which she was applying on her elbows. And this happened once or twice, and finally I spoke up and said, "I don't like that. Keep your hands out of my hair." And she said, "Oh, well, you'll have to forgive me." Now, this to me is like the microaggression thinking. She says, "I am a wasp." Well, I had no clue what she was talking about. She looked human to me. But then she went on to translate, "I am white Anglo-Saxon Protestant." Now, if that was supposed to mean something to me, and all these years later, it still doesn't. But in her mind, it exempted her from violating me, that somehow being a wasp allowed her to walk up to me, a stranger, and start rubbing my hair for whatever reason, and then rub her hands to her elbows. And I didn't verbalize it, but I think that my non-verbal response was sufficient because she never did that again. But she justified whatever she did by saying, "I am a wasp." And I never forgot that. It said to me that I have a right to touch you. I have a right to do this because I am of this class, of this caste, and so forth. So, yeah, microaggression may be something that's starting to catch hold in some places, may even be a parlance in the academic world. But my concluding thoughts are many disasters, small disasters, accumulate. And if you keep being aggressively negative to someone, however micro, these aggressions will build. And it does show minor insults, and it's an insult against the people. So if you have some retaliation or some kind of recoil, because if you keep pushing anything long enough, then it gets pushed back. So there shouldn't be a surprise. If there's an eruption in what seemed like a very placid situation, if your tendencies is this microaggression where you're essentially a bully. Because, you see, thoughts determine our actions. So implicit bias can lead to discriminatory behaviors. It's no surprise race is a prime area for implicit bias. And if you live in America, there's a widespread preference for light-skinned over dark-skinned, white over black. And the implicit associations we hold often don't align with our declared beliefs. I know a lot of white persons will say, "I'm not prejudiced. My boyfriend is black." Or, "I'm not prejudiced. I have my best friend is black." Having an association with someone doesn't exempt how you think. It is very easy. If you love something, you see no flaws. Or if you are close to something, you aren't looking for denigrating things. But if you have in mind that this something can come out at any time, then you can love me as your friend and despise the black young man with sagging pants and have some kind of irritation and prejudicial feelings. Racial minorities can hold very implicit biases also. It's not just white on black. And so we all have to examine ourselves. We have to ask, am I really measuring the person for who they are, or is there some little hidden agenda that I picked up as a child or in my first marriage or when I was in college? Because we can't exempt ourselves from our wrongdoing and expect to homogenize society. So with that, I thank you so much for listening, And I hope you come back and listen again, and I ask you to join me in conversation just to see how we can make this world a better place. So this is Getting It Right with Dr. Bowles. Until next time, be safe.